powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We have a hilarious story involving a pretzel. I know it sounds confusing. That's coming up in the timeline. Mike Golic Jr. going to join us at noon. Before we get to any of that, let's get to some Mariners free agency, Jacob.
Before we get to that, I just have to say that I am so mad at you that you put me in a position where I am defending DJ Dallas and Travis Homer.
No, I know.
Look what you've done.
What did you make me do? What did I do? You did that to yourself. I said that the Seahawks could certainly use another body in that running back room. Exactly. You played yourself. You came in here talking about...
Well, you started talking about Le'Veon Bell coming in here.
On third down, try a screen to Travis Homer. It works every time.
I didn't say that. You said that.
I have yet to see Travis Homer put in a position where you're like, oh, this really works for him. It's not an insult to Travis Homer. It's not.
Well played. Your hear me out.
Thank you.
I thought I did excellent.
I thought I did a pretty good job.
You did a pretty good job, but still, I'm not here for it. But
right. Well, I've had enough of Le'Veon Bell for right now. We're on to Mariners. Jason Churchill, Prospect Insider. He's got a podcast. He's got a website. And obviously, at Prospect Insider is his Twitter handle. Friend of the show. He was on with Mike Salk this morning talking about Mariners free agency. They covered a lot of ground. So I want to revisit it here because there's a lot of stuff here I think will interest you, Jake, and you, Curtis, including something about Mac Chapman that I've heard you say. So I want to get back to it. But we're actually going to start with that big shortstop market. Jason was asked whether or not he thinks the Mariners are in play for any of those guys.
I kind of crossed out Carlos Correa, Javier Baez, and Corey Seager. You know, myself, I don't expect any of the three to engage with Seattle or vice versa, really. If the market caves on Javier Baez and Seattle's done something else at third base, I could see Baez becoming an option. But I think as things are kind of opening up, I don't think any of those three are really on the radar in either direction, player to team, team to player. But I do think Marcus Semien's their top target, and I think Trevor Story's a realistic option for Seattle. I think Story would consider playing second base and playing in Seattle if the numbers are right. And I think that's the big question. Where's the market actually headed this winter?
I've heard Marcus Semien's name thrown around so much more than Trevor Story, and for good reason, right? Guy from the West Coast, it makes sense. He might want to come back. I was talking with Salk earlier who said, I don't know, I could see the Dodgers making a move for a guy like Semien. So what if Story ends up being the person the Mariners have to go for? We know they don't want to move on from JP at short. What do you guys think about Story?
Story is very intriguing to me. The only thing that makes me nervous about him, to be honest with you, is the whole difference between the type of player he is at Coors Field in Colorado versus when he's on the road away from the thin air and the difference there. But quite frankly, still that's still better than what we've had here with the Mariners. And I do believe that Trevor Story eventually adjusts. I like the talent. I think it would be a very nice addition. And so I absolutely wouldn't hate it. I wouldn't be mad at it. Curtis, what do you think about that with Trevor Story?
Yeah, I wouldn't hate it either. I think he is going to be moved off of shortstop in his future. He's dealing with some arm issues, which is why there's that possibility that he comes to Seattle or another team and is not the shortstop going forward. You bring up his splits from home and road. At home at Coors Field, he's got an OPS over 900, 972, and then away from Coors Field at 752. So he's about league average away from Coors Field. It's not amazing.
That.
You bring up the Dodgers being interested in Marcus Semien. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think that's going to happen at all. They've got Trey Turner at shortstop, and they've got Gavin Lux at second base. Two guys who are young. Trey Turner is one of the most exciting players in baseball. Gavin Lux is going to be just 24 years old, and he played a lot this last season for the Dodgers. I don't think they're in the market for a middle infielder at all.
So then who are some West Coast teams that might be vying for Semien?
Well, we heard from Divish the other day, Ryan Divish of the Seattle Times, that the Giants could be very much in play for Marcus Semien.
Right.
And that, to me, I think is much more concerning than anything the Dodgers could possibly
because
do in the free agency.
Because he's from the Bay Area.
Yeah, he played for the A's. He's from Oakland. San Francisco is just a trip across the bridge away from where he grew up. I believe he played at Cal Berkeley as well. So, I mean, he's Bay Area through and through. The Giants are just coming off a 107-win season, too.
Which they did with a lot of older players.
Yeah.
I love so much.
Yeah.
It is incredible, but also how much of it are the Giants going to be able to keep together? How much of it are the Giants going to be able to build upon going into this next year? They were a big, nice surprise, and it was a lot of fun watching the team. But how much of that is going to be able to be sustainable, right? That's my question when it comes to the Giants. Curtis, you might have a better answer on that than I do, but I almost view that as the Mariners situation. It's great that they won 90 games. It's great that the Giants got to 100 wins, but is that something that they are easily going to be able to replicate if you don't have Kevin Gausman? If you right? I mean, just
Buster Posey. He just retired.
And they also are still in a division where it's like, I don't know if you're going to be able to be as lucky staying ahead of the Dodgers this time around.
Well, I think the Padres are due for a bounce back next season.
Yeah, that's
you've got
such a surprise,
especially now
man.
Bob Melvin's going to be the manager.
Yeah, exactly.
Let me jump to the next one here so we can cover a few of these guys. This one, Jason Churchill talking about Matt Chapman as a potential fit.
I think you're right. Was he 29 in April? Probably makes $20 to $25 million over the next 2 years. If there are signs he can get back to 2018, 2019 levels at the plate, there's actually upside there. And then going to the A's and talking about him makes a ton of sense. If he's the second best offensive piece over the winter that the club adds, it's a really good get. I know there's some questions there. I don't have his numbers in front of me. He wasn't great last year, struggled a little bit in 2020. Obviously, the hip thing was a problem for him. But he's really, really interesting. And in some ways, is kind of a right-handed Kyle Seager, at least Kyle Seager in his prime.
DePoto's made it clear he's interested in a couple guys from the A's.
Yeah, he has. And honestly, any one of those pitchers, I'm okay with that. I mean, if you're not having to give up big trade pieces for those guys – which I don't think you would have to, pieces that you're looking at and going, oh man, I can't believe that they parted ways with that. I would be totally fine with that. But when it comes to Matt Chapman, I think the key aspect of that, though, with Churchill, that he said, to me, it has to be the second or third best bat that you add. Matt Chapman, cannot be the best bat that you add. It can't be a close second, in my opinion. There has to be a significant impact bat, and if you add Matt Chapman, then I do believe that that would be a very nice addition for you. And the reason why it's great as well is because he fits into the culture and the mindset of the Mariners team, which very much is a defensive-minded organization and continuing to have great infield play. So if you add, let's say, all right, we're able to go down fantasy world here. You can add Marcus Semien, and then you add Matt Chapman to that. I would be very, very happy with looking at that infield heading into next season.
Church already looked at this and said it, but Curtis, I know you said he's basically a younger Kyle Seager.
Well, right-handed Kyle Seager. And younger, yeah.
And younger. Both
Chapman will
true.
Be 29 this season.
Right.
And you look at his numbers last year, hit .210 with a .314 on base. 27 home runs, struck out 200 times. I mean, that is a very Kyle Seager kind of stat line. Yet last year was his worst year with the bat. In his career, he's .243 hitter with an .808 OPS. He's a guy that does put the ball in play a little more frequently than Kyle Seager does, at least over the course of his career. And defensively, he is maybe the best defensive third baseman in baseball. And look, if you put Chapman on the same side of the field as J.P. Crawford, that becomes the best side of the infield, maybe in the American League. And maybe there's a possibility of adding Marcus Semien, another Gold Glover at second base. You've got Ty France at first base. Yeah, that infield is just vacuums, all four spots.
Mm-hmm. I know some people are saying it might be a mistake to overlook some of the top-tier shortstops and keep JP there. We will get to that conversation later. Is there another third baseman you guys would rather have? I know Bryant has been looked at as both a little more versatile and outfield guy too, so you can maybe include him, but there might be another guy.
I mean, that's the unique part about Chris Bryant. I mean, you could still potentially add him to this team, even if you did go down the road with Matt Chapman and Marcus Semien, because he
could make him your fourth outfielder.
Yes. I mean, you could absolutely do that. And would anybody be mad at that? I certainly wouldn't be. I think that would be the coup of the century. For the Mariners. And so that's what's so unique about Chris Bryant and kind of his flexibility and what he could bring to the table. But you ask about third base, I mean, it just kind of goes to perfectly lead into another topic of conversation, which is somebody we've mentioned on this show, which is Jose Ramirez, cut number 14, Jason Churchill talking about that.
So when you're the Mariners and you're trying to pry away a player like Jose Ramirez, who's probably one of the top five position players in the American League, you know, what's that going to cost you? I mean, obviously you want to cross Jose Rodriguez off that list, but what else is Cleveland going to look for? Look at what Cleveland has done in the past when making significant deals. They've often gone after pitching. And this doesn't mean guys that are down your prospect list. This means guys that are in your top five, in your top eight. This means Matt Brash. This means George Kirby, most likely. They're absolutely going to ask and probably even try to demand Logan Gilbert. And if you're Seattle, you have to be out. If we're talking about Kirby and Gilbert, it kind of defeats the purpose to some level.
I agree with that last part. Like, there's a certain – I think there's more than just Rodriguez that I wouldn't trade.
Really? So if it came down to trading both of those guys, you'd say no way. I'm walking away from that deal.
Yes.
Curtis, what would you say?
Boy, yeah, if it came down
to
trading...
It would have to be an otherworldly talent where the other team is losing that trade.
Yeah, if it came down to trading Julio, I would say no. I would say
no. With
no.
Julio, no.
Yeah.
If no,
it came
no down
to
no
both
way.
Kirby and Hancock.
If I'm,
or Gilbert,
I would not say no to a trade involving Emerson Hancock.
Both.
George Kirby, to a lesser extent, I would say no. I'd be a little more open to dealing him than I would Logan Gilbert, just because we kind of know what Logan Gilbert could be. I mean, we saw what his ceiling was in that Yankees start earlier this season.
Yeah.
But Hancock, I would be more than okay with dealing. I think you have a ton of organizational depth at starting pitcher. You're going to have to tap into it at some point. You can't fall in love with all these guys because not every single one of them is going to pan out. Just as we saw the last time the Mariners had an incredible wave of young pitching talent with Taijuan Walker, James Paxton, and Danny Holton.
Yep.
Danny Holton was viewed as the
sure
thing.
We need to talk about
Thank
Danny
you.
Holton right
Thank
now,
you.
Curtis.
Yeah,
Danny
Holton
nice
was viewed
day.
As the
I'm
sure thing.
To have
he
a
never
nice
played.
Day,
exactly
Curtis.
Why you can't sit there with these cards and keep them close to your vest. No, I'm not going to
I'm saying just don't trade too many of
no,
them.
I agree with you, but the other one that you probably would have to look at, and this is where I would love to see what the reaction would be, is I don't think it would come down to two pitchers. I don't think it would come down to George Kirby and Emerson Hancock. Here's the deal, take it or leave it. It probably would look something more like Emerson Hancock and Noelvi Marte. That's
yeah,
because
you're losing
more of the
a stud infielder. You're
going to
want to require
a
stud
infielder.
Infielder.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Then fine.
That to me is the conversation. So if it came down to that, I would have to say, yeah, I probably would do the deal because – of Jose Ramirez, where he's at age-wise, the impact that he can have for your team in his prime years, and it's in the years it fits into the profile and the mold of when you want to start competing, which is starting next year and the years after that. So you're going and giving proven commodity, and you're having to give up, you know, potential talent. So you're going to have to part ways. If you want to go and make a splash a trade like that, guess what? You're going to have to give away some of those pieces and have to and be comfortable living with it.
All right. You can find that full interview with Jason Churchill on the Mike Salk podcast page on 710sports.com. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru, Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, Jake. Is the game really passed Pete Carroll by?
Well, I heard a sound here. Cut number 7, Mike Tannenbaum going all in on Pete Carroll needing to retire.
I think it's time for Pete to retire. I think the game's passed him by from this standpoint. He gave up 2 first-round picks for a safety. The game's just played differently. One of the things I love about Nick Saban is Nick went to Alabama. They had very few offensive players drafted early in his tenure. Now they have multiple quarterbacks, Jalen Hurts, Tua, Mac Jones, multiple wide receivers. He's evolved. I don't see Pete Carroll evolving. I would move on from Pete, let him retire.
Guy having a hard time in the background there.
Yeah, oh, man, he is whistling at everything. Oh, my goodness.
Has anyone checked on him? Is someone dying in the background?
That man some water.
with Tannenbaum's comments, to answer your original question, has the game passed Pete Carroll by? No, it has not passed him by. Pete Carroll is still a very good head coach who I believe that is showing that with his defensive turnaround this season. But the problem is that, as we've talked about before, what is your philosophy and what is your team reflective of right now? What are the strengths of your team right now and how are you getting the most out of them versus here's my philosophy and here's what I want to be good at, yet I don't have the pieces to do it, or I'm constantly missing in terms of the acquisitions that I'm making via the draft and via free agency. That, to me, has been a huge issue for this organization, for Pete Carroll, for John Schneider, in terms of having that come to life. And now this is reason why you get people like Mike Tannenbaum looking at that. Now, the second part of the conversation that he points to in Nick Saban and his evolution, you know that I have pointed to that before. And with Bill Belichick as well. Those two showing evolution in the way that they play and them constantly changing based off of the strengths of their roster. He has a point there. But in terms of Pete Carroll and this game passing him by, no. What I think is they've just done a horrible job evaluating and acquiring talent to fit the style of play in which they want, which has exacerbated so many problems for this team over the last 2 to 3 years especially.
Second down. Jake was taking it easy with DS for his snap total in Week 10. The right move?
I don't believe it was. I understand wanting to ease him in, but if he's ready, you got to play him, and you got to let him go. Holding him to only 5 snaps in this game when he was heavily needed, I just don't understand that. And especially when you see Russell Wilson in a situation where they're towards the red zone, they're approaching the red zone, and you see him having to throw a one-on-one go ball to Penny Hart because it was the right decision. It's what the coverage dictated, and that was the right throw. That's not winning football. How is your second-round pick not in that situation? How is he not the third receiver on the field getting that opportunity? So, all right, you try to ease him in. That has to change. That has to change drastically this next week. You need Dee Eskridge on the field. You didn't want to go after OBJ more aggressively because the thought process was, hey, we're going to give him an offer. We're going to be in on the discussion. But we also feel comfortable if we lose out because we got Dee Eskridge. He's coming back, and we love what he does. Then show it. Show the trust. Show the faith. Show the belief that he can be that guy, and that means putting him on the field.
Third down. Forgot I turned my mic off. Sorry. What should Washington Huskies fans be cautious of when it comes to their next hire?
Something that I'd be cautious of. It isn't a complete no for me, but be cautious of diving into the Chris Peterson coaching tree. I think that that is a trap, personally. And it doesn't mean that somebody like Justin Wilcox can't be a good hire for the University of Washington, but that can't be the lead factor and the big reason why he is under consideration or that he eventually gets the job. I know Peterson will be involved in the hiring process and all of that, and I know that he will give sound advice. I know that Chris Peterson isn't just going to look out for his quote-unquote guys. That's not who he is. But that would be something I'm cautious of, because are you just trying to go back to the well of the heyday of what you had recently with Chris Peterson, or are you truly getting the best and brightest mind that can absolutely turn this program around and restart it and put yourself in the best position? And somebody like Justin Wilcox, I even saw on Bruce Feldman's list was Jeff Choate, who was the head coach at Montana State, and now he's the inside linebackers coach for Texas, him being on that list. Very much the only reason why he's on that list is because the connection with Chris Peterson. So I don't think Jeff Choate is really in an opportunity to be a legitimate candidate, but I think Justin Wilcox is. And what Justin Wilcox, you could say, hey, I didn't have the support down in Cal. I think that's all very fair. But what are you doing offensively that's going to turn this thing around and be dynamic? And so that would be my one caution to Huskies fans, is be careful of just trying to dip back into that well. Go after the best, brightest mind out there that is going to restart this program, re-jump it, and bring new eyes that is necessary for this team to head in the right direction.
Fourth down. When it comes to the Seahawks addressing the offensive line, what's the heart of the issue?
The heart of the issue is listening to Mark Schlereth honestly talk with Wyman and Bob yesterday. Cut number one, here's what Mark Schlereth had to say about Russ covering up a lot.
And Russell is one of those guys that can cover warts. You tend to not honestly, I think, assess yourself. Or you're like, yeah, we're not good enough there, but our quarterback will cover that up. So let's address something else, you know. And then eventually you ignore it for long enough And then you look at your team, and all of a sudden you're old. You're not explosive. You're not physical.
So I think Mark Schlereth was pointing to a number of different issues with this team across the board. But when he talks about that, what I hear is offensive line. What I hear is offensive line and what has happened and what has transpired for 6 years plus. For 6 years, at least, that's been the attitude and the idea around the offensive line is, hey, we don't need to invest as much here. We can take on a project like a Luke Jokel or somebody of that nature because Russell Wilson is the ultimate fixer. Russell Wilson is going to get us right. Russell Wilson can put us in good situations or he can make up for it with his legs. And I think that that mindset and that thought process has put them in such a position where now you have an offensive line here that, once again, is struggling and it did not take a serious look at how to evaluate and how to reevaluate and how to upgrade this group. And I believe that's hurt them as it's pertained to this offseason as it's pertained to this offensive line this season. And it happened also in 2020 when you just signed we were at 19, 20 offensive linemen that they had signed. So it just that approach to me just screams offensive line and where they've been at over the past 6 years.
That was Four Down Territory. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Coming up next, LA Staples Center is going to be renamed. I hate it. Also, a Philadelphia sports radio caller was involved in a hit and run accident while giving his take on Ben Simmons. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It's The Timeline on Jake and Stacey. We are reading you the top stories in the world of sports, especially those trendy or weird ones you're going to see on your own timeline. So when you see random things like crypto or Staples and you wonder, why on earth am I seeing this on my timeline? Why is Staples trending? I haven't been to a Staples. I don't think anyone has been to a
Staples.
Probably
why.
Well, that's exactly
there's a name
what.
Change,
that's
yeah.
exactly right. So, Staples Center is officially changing its name. The new name, Crypto.com Arena.
It rolls off the tongue.
It's like a bad joke.
I wouldn't mind even Crypto Arena. First of all, Staples. So it shouldn't be changed. Like. That's been the name, Staples Center. It's going to be like the Bon Marché. We're still going to call it Staples Center.
It's iconic.
Yes. I understand that name changes are going to happen. I hate when arena or stadium name changes are so obviously a company name. It's one thing if it's like,
right,
it's a company, but we aren't thinking about it. But to have crypto.com... Crypto.com. The only funny thing I've seen about this is someone, and I'm so mad at myself for forgetting the Twitter handle, saying the only way to justify this is to have Tales from the Crypt as the title for your game recaps, which I don't mind. But otherwise, I hate everything about it. I'm not even a Lakers fan.
Well, and it's not like dissing on cryptocurrency and that whole scene and that vibe. Like, I don't know what any of that is. I don't want to know what any of that is, but like, it is the clunkiest name of an arena now.
Yes, it is brutal. I mean, that's the hard part. Staples Center rolls off the tongue. It's iconic. You know where it is. L.A. That whole scene.
No, now
you can just envision all the celebrities there, right? And what kind of nickname do you even come up with that?
The nickname is the best part of it. The Crypt is the best part of it.
Yeah, you're.
But Crypto.com Arena, it's worse than Smoothie King. And I never thought
you think it's worse than Smoothie King.
Yes, I do. The .com makes it worse. I'm not kidding. It's just the .com that makes it horrible.
Like, yeah, that is pretty bad.
Thanks. I mean, I get it. If you just had crypto, people would be like, "Oh, cryptocurrency, cool." But I get it. Crypto.com. You want to draw attention to it. I don't think that a website name should be allowed to be the name of an arena. It just feels. Gross. I hate it.
We are entering new territory. And so the one thing that you have to wonder is crypto.com going to be a successful run? Is it going to be a well-remembered run?
Yeah, with how volatile cryptocurrency is,
right.
I mean, can we guarantee that this business is going to exist
the
in
509,
like 2 years?
No, 509 says, you do know Staples is a company too, right? But the point is that some names are fine. Some names just make sense in the moment and they don't bother you. Like, we already know that some names are awful. Smoothie King is a horrible name for an arena or a stadium, as is Crypto.com. I'm sorry, some business names are just better than others.
360 says, Climate Pledge Arena. Give me Crypto any day.
I would rather have Climate Pledge Arena than Crypto.com Arena. I can't
stress. Climate Pledge is pretty bad.
Climate Pledge is at least, it's just a nondescript kind of like Climate Pledge. Okay. Yeah, let's do it. This is Curtis.
I'm going to go to the Climate Pledge. Doesn't sound like I'm going to a sports event or a music event.
A Philadelphia sports radio caller was involved in a hit-and-run accident while giving his take. He called into 94 WIP to talk about Ben Simmons. This is how that call sounded.
Let's go to James in the Northeast. Hi, James.
Angelo, morning team. How y'all been?
We're doing great, James. What's on your mind, bro?
Not bad. Someone just hit my car.
Oh no.
Not bad.
You just got hit.
Yeah, they're driving off. It's okay.
What?
Oh no! What? No. Yeah, James.
What's your license plate?
Get your license plate.
Anyway,
I'll write it down. Get your license plate.
I'll get a lawyer for you. Read the license plate over the radio.
No. Oh yeah, that's wrong. That shouldn't be that.
They swerved into my lane. No way. Anyway. I was calling about Ben Simmons.
What? James,
I'm not worried about it.
You just got in a car accident? You called about Ben Simmons?
Oh, that's an accident.
Yeah, because he annoys me more than someone hitting my car and driving off.
If I was making a sketch about Philadelphia sports radio, it would be that exact clip.
Unbelievable. I love that at the end he's like, hey, Ben Simmons annoys me more than the guy that just hit my car and drove off.
I like the part where the guy's like, hey, give me his license. I'll call the cops. I'll get you a lawyer.
Yeah.
I can't do an accent for anything. That's my random nondescript East Coast accent.
Do we think that guy is friends with this Philadelphia fan?
We're running out of guys out here. We're on reserves. Practice squad guys. I'm ready to roll if they need me. I'm 26 years old.
We're all ready to roll.
I played 2 years. Varsity. I'm in the best shape of my life. I'm going
Eagle. It's a whole vibe.
How have we not made Varsity the like sign off for this show?
2 years.
No, I think that guy hit the other guy on a way to his flag football game.
Oh, you think so?
That guy, yes. On the way to his rec league game, that guy ran into that guy and was like, I don't have time. I'll never get my walk on.
Out of the way.
Such a unique and special place. That's all I'll say.
Philly?
Oh, yeah.
Have you been?
Yes, I have been once, but
it seems like a magical place. I would love to go.
Yeah, the people sound lovely.
Next story, Matthew Stafford's wife, Kelly, is apologizing for throwing a pretzel at a 49ers fan on Monday night, calling it a moment of weakness. And to be honest,
I don't know.
Who among us has not wanted to throw a pretzel at a 49ers fan?
Now, here's the thing.
Here's
where I will step up because I don't know anything about this. So I could completely be off. But just imagine, okay?
Okay.
You hear the people talk in those stadiums.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And the type of things that they say.
Right.
Imagine being a family member.
Yes. I'm talking
a relative, sibling, a mother, a father, a wife, and hearing some idiot talk and say the most obscene things about your loved one. Who's playing the game? Like, some point you go, I know that is, I know that's part of it, and you try to build up thick skin, and then there's another part of it where it's horrible. It's awful.
I absolutely agree.
And so that's something, or I'm not suggesting that throwing a pretzel at anybody in the stands is any type of appropriate action, but I can understand her getting to that anger, that moment of frustration, that the emotion of being somebody that's amongst all that. I mean, just thinking about it personally, honestly, you know, when I was at BYU, and at one point I got benched, and you know, my wife was at the game, and you know, there were fans saying all sorts of things about me and everything, and it just got to the point where she started to cry. Like, it just was so emotional in that moment, and you know, she was just unfortunately stuck by a lot of crazy fans, you know, but it is impactful. It is hurtful. So I don't know the situation, and I'm not saying it's appropriate, but I can understand a family member being so angry at a fan who's saying some ridiculous things that, you know, either words are exchanged or a pretzel is thrown.
I'm going to be really honest. I am being honest. I don't know Kelly. I don't know anything about her. I have no problem with her throwing a pretzel. It's funny for two reasons. Number one, because it's at a 49ers fan. And number two, because it's a pretzel.
Yeah,
and
pretzels
I'm imagining
are...
a giant... The concept of someone throwing as hard as they can a very soft object that softly bounces off of someone always makes me laugh. I don't care what it is. If you're throwing a piece of paper, if you're throwing a pretzel, if you're throwing a scarf.
You got to frisbee the pretzel. You can't just throw it like a ball. You got to kind of fling it.
Yeah, I wish someone would have told her that. She could have done some damage. Instead, I'm guessing she just kind of tossed it. But no, it is trash behavior. Like, it is one of those things where you're like, I know that you want to be at a game and you're having a good time and you're with your friends. And I get it. Like, I say stuff all the time to my friends when we're talking, but you really never know if someone's mom is going to be sitting next to you in the stands, and just be a little aware of it. You know what I mean? It's like you never know if Jordan Love's girlfriend and his mom are going to be in the seat behind you on the very back wall of Arrowhead Stadium. You never know.
You never know. Right. But I'll tell you this: most fans that go to these games, they don't care to know. They don't care, and you know that's fine. That's fine.
Mike Golic Jr. is going to join us at the top of the hour. So before we get to that, is Russell Wilson careening towards a breakup with the Seahawks? Some think so, including Mike. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
Oh, man. I don't know if anyone's seen that video of the Knicks fans after the season opener, but... I think once a day, the three of us quote it, and if Taylor's back there, the four of us quote it. At least once a day, maybe more than that. It's just, I can't stop. I'm just randomly bing bong, like over random, like, segments. I can't stop. All right.
Oh, man.
That's great. If you haven't seen it, you should check it out. Is Russell Wilson careening towards a breakup with this team? That's what Mike Golic Jr. thinks.
I go back to, we heard Greg Olsen earlier this year, who was teammates with Russell Wilson for a short time in Seattle, said that Russell Wilson cares about two things. One, his legacy, and two, winning. That is all that drives him. And so now, if the latter is going to subvert the former and the way the Seahawks are going right now, yeah, this absolutely seems like it's careening towards that breakup.
The younger Michael Golic is going to join us in about 15 minutes to talk about the Seahawks. We're going to get some, hopefully some college ball questions in there too, since a lot of his coverage is over college football. But let's jump to first the Seahawks-Russell Wilson thing. We had Jerry Brewer on yesterday, who we also talked to about that, and I thought his take was really nuanced, which was like, look, no one has to be the bad guy, and this can go a lot of ways. One, it can still be fixed. Mm-hmm. Will Russell Wilson be patient with the team? Will the team... be honest with Russell Wilson about what they need, right? Like, is that going to be an honest conversation where you no longer have Mark Rogers releasing a list of teams he'd be fine being traded to Adam Schefter, and instead you have two people, mm-hmm. Carroll and Wilson, talking to each other, frankly? Are you going to have that angle, like a professional angle? And if they decide, like, hey, we want to go in a different direction and you want to go in a different direction, no one has to be the villain. Neither the Seahawks nor Wilson need to, and no one's the good guy. It's sports in 2021. I love the way that Jerry Brewer talked about it.
Yeah, we have that cut, actually. Cut number 9, Jerry goes into that, and I thought like you said, he laid it out perfectly.
Everybody's always looking at it on pick a side and whose fault it is, but it has to be a lot more of a relational thing. What are you trying to get out of this? What are we trying to do in the big picture? And everyone needs to be absolutely honest with each other about where the relationship is. And that's how you make that decision. But you can't make a decision with, like, each entity going into its own corner and not saying the things to each other that you are hearing, like, in other places. So that's where I hope they just get to that place where whatever the future is, it is mutually decided upon, because it's been one of the great partnerships of this century in sports, and it can end as a partnership. It doesn't have to end as this battle in which there's a hero and a villain.
That part, to me, when you talk about from it with Jerry, his perspective, I thought he nailed it perfectly. And if it does lead to a breakup at the end of the year, then I honestly don't see it as villain, hero, winner, loser. The reason why you do that, the reason why people automatically get, you know, caught up in these, right? Right away they get put in their corners, is because it comes down to the future.
who do you think the Seahawks have the best future with, right? And how does that come together? But really, I view this very much as a situation where you talk about it philosophically from a team's perspective, is the trust there. I think that's the one thing that Jerry didn't speak to that I legitimately think is a huge factor between both sides, is the trust. The trust in the quarterback to play at the level that he believes that he can play at, and also the trust in Pete Carroll's vision and philosophy in terms of how to bring the best out of him, right? And so can they get on the same page moving forward and continue that partnership and relationship? And that's the one thing that we all just don't know the answer to that question is that trust there where they can communicate and trust what each other is saying and carry that same vision moving forward? And one of the other things that Jerry said that wasn't in that cut is I think he also said that Russell Wilson needs to be patient or would have to be patient, right? And if you're 32 years old and you're in the still in the prime of your career, are you willing to be patient to eventually have that team be turned into a serious contender?
I don't know how many steps removed they are from being one, which sounds ridiculous given their record and how abysmal that offense looked and the defense has turned, but how tough the defense was to start the season. But, I mean, I think that they have a lot of pieces. Now, some of their biggest pieces are guys that are already in veteran contracts, so that window is much smaller than it would be if they were guys on rookie deals. But this is a team that has the flexibility and ability, outside of not having a first-round pick this upcoming season, to make moves to improve in a very short period of time.
Yeah, I would.
I think one of the moves is one of those moves, parting ways with Wilson for draft picks to take a different direction. That's just one of the questions.
Yeah, it is. It is one of those questions, and something that you have to evaluate seriously when you're the Seattle Seahawks, and also something that ownership is going to have to evaluate seriously at some point. And hopefully, it doesn't really get to that point. Hopefully, it doesn't. But I do believe that you're going to definitely have that conversation swirling at the end of this offseason. So that's why at this second half of this year, I believe, is so important. It's so important to see Russell Wilson play well. It's important to see Shane Waldron in this offense perform well. It's important to evaluate the defense continually and Pete Carroll as you're going through this entire process. But that is why I think that when you hear the sound of Mike Golic Jr., you know, saying that he fully expects and sees this, you know, going towards the direction of a divorce. Whereas I believe, you know, when Jerry Brewer is talking about this,
he says it doesn't have to.
It doesn't have to. He doesn't. He didn't discount it either.
No, but he said this is a relationship that, if both parties listen to each other and are honest, can be salvaged.
Mm-hmm. And that I think is very important. And that is something that is incredibly difficult with what we know of everyone involved, right? So, you know, Stacey, at some point in the offseason, I can't remember when, but, you know, day, you know, 150 of the, you know, drama that was ensuing, you know, you'd lost your mind because
you're
so frustrated about the ego that was on display between Russell Wilson, John Schneider, and Pete Carroll, right? All parties. And so can that ego be put aside? And can you get to the heart of the issues and listen so that you can move forward together? That, I think, absolutely 100% Jerry Brewer, you know, absolutely nailed it with.
All right, Mike Golic Jr. going to join us next. Don't go anywhere.